things get a little bit grim.
But this is especially heinous.
Did you tell the police that she was murdered, May?
Nope.
Witchy ghost stuff.
Ah! That made me scared.
A spooky girl amateur hour.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good.
You good?
Yeah.
Are you enjoying your unemployment?
Boy, am I.
I saw you were baking something yesterday, and I would love to have, if there are leftovers from the Van Stroms, a rhubarb pie. A piece of rhubarb pie.
Yeah, just come over tomorrow.
Okay.
Just come over. Over to the cookout.
Great.
Okay. I would love that.
I would love to.
Yeah, I have the rhubarb prepared. I have all the pie crusts prepared. I made the apple pie because I can whip out an apple pie.
Pretty easy.
Yeah. Like, no one's business. So, I have the peach. I made a peach bourbon barbecue sauce. It was on my unemployed cooking list.
Yeah.
A barbecue sauce. I have nailed it.
Ooh.
It is so good. If anybody wants the recipe, just like slide in my DMs. I'll give it to you. It is bomb. It is fucking fire.
How about you give it to me and I'll post it on the Instagram?
Okay. I'll do that.
If that's cool.
Yeah.
I love that. Jenny's Cooking Corner.
Oh my God. If we ever get a Patreon, we'll add that.
Yeah. Love that.
How fun would that be?
I made a rhubarb. What was it? Like a custard?
Oh, it's your face.
Sorry.
What was it?
What was it even? Jam? No. It was not a jam. It was a dessert.
Okay.
It had a crust, but it was not a pie.
Was it a cobbler?
Yeah, maybe.
Was it a crumble?
A crumble. That could be it. Listen, I don't know what I made. All I know is
Did it have a crust?
It had a crust. It didn't have a topping.
Oh, okay.
It didn't have a crust on top.
It didn't have a crust on top.
No, it had a crust on the bottom.
Oh, pie crust?
No.
What kind of crust? Like cake crust? Spongy?
No. I guess more pie crust. I made it.
Okay.
I didn't buy it. So it didn't turn out that great. I'm not going
to
lie.
Listen, I have to be honest with you. Rhubarb in and of itself is not a good produce.
I love raw rhubarb.
What?
Oh, yeah, girl. I will eat that shit like celery.
What?
Yes.
I try
you
to
know that I love sour things.
Oh, my God. You ow, and your ow, rhubarb ow. And grapefruit.
I used to feed rhubarb to my horse, and it was hysterical.
He fucking hill jack.
So mad at me. We had a huge rhubarb bush that grew on the farm, and this horse was stupid. And he would come over, and I would feed him rhubarb, and he would make, like, the worst faces. Like, imagine giving a horse a lemon. That's what it looked like. And I could not stop myself. My mom would yell at me all the time about it.
But it upset the horse's tummy?
I don't know.
Okay. You never asked the horse?
No, we didn't have a sit-down combo about
oh,
it.
Oh, okay, got it. Force feeding horses rhubarb.
Yeah, oh my gosh. But it was, one of my favorite things was to go out and pick rhubarb and just eat it right out of the bush.
Really?
Yeah.
I love that for you.
I really want a rhubarb bush. I have, my friend Skylar gave me a bunch of rhubarb pieces from her garden.
Ooh, like little starts?
Well, she gave me like the big, like shoots that were ready.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what I made my rhubarb dessert out of.
Cool. Yeah.
But can't wait to try yours.
Well, we'll see how it goes. It has to be phenomenal or else Ian's Nana won't love me. So
no pressure.
No pressure at all. It's not a big deal.
May I offer you a beverage?
No, I'm just chilling. I gotta be honest. I'm really not drinking these days.
Really?
Yeah.
Not doing a whole lot?
No.
Okay.
I poured myself a glass because I use bourbon and the bourbon barbecue.
Yeah.
And so I poured myself a little glass of like bourbon neat. And I took like two sips and then I started wandering around the house doing whatever the fuck I do in my evenings and just
forgot about her.
Yeah, I forgot about her. And that was the most I had a couple White Claws on vacation, but
sure.
Really not. Whereas I used to drink like three White Claws an evening.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. That's not true. A couple nights a week.
Yeah.
Perhaps I would have a couple White Claws, but honestly, no, I'm not.
Okay. Well, you know where they are if you would like one. You just help yourself.
Thank you. I've been kind of by accident, like, really improving my eating habits.
Ooh.
Thank you. For the past, like, 8 days in a row, I have ate at least 2 meals a day.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you.
We love it.
We do. I have actually gotten really hooked on, I've had it for lunch the past 500 days in a row.
Uh-huh.
Where it's like a little personal pizza crust.
Okay.
With everything but the bagel dip. And then like fresh broccoli and corn and cucumber and cherry tomatoes. And you just eat it like a pizza. It's so good.
That sounds really good.
It's so bomb. And it's like enough. It has carbs, so it's like filling. Yeah. And it, but you still like feel good.
That's awesome.
Thank you. I've been eating a lot of yogurt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been on a nutrition journey, as I am now calling it. But, you know, we're children of the 90s. We grew up with a lot of diet culture.
Yeah.
And I went on my first diet when I was 12.
Yeah.
And I've really worked really hard to, like, break that mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm working with a nutrition coach. And her whole goal for me is, she does not care if I go over a calorie amount for the day. She wants me to meet a protein goal for a day.
Mm.
And that in and of itself will...
is difficult.
Oh my gosh. I think I've only, like, actually done, like, made my protein goal, like, 3 or 4 times.
Really?
It's...
so hard.
So hard to do. It's so much food. And
I could never.
It's all... I don't want to say heavy, but protein...
wait.
Tends to have a little bit more substance to it than like a rice cake. And
you're telling me rice cakes don't have protein?
Weird. But it's been really, really good. I've really enjoyed working toward that and just being able to have a better relationship with
food. Yeah, I agree with you. I think the first time I was probably around the same age when my figure skating coach chastised me and told me if I ever wanted to be taken seriously in this sport, I would have to lose weight because my boobs were growing and I was having trouble landing like my axles and
throwing your center of gravity off.
Seriously, but like I was going through puberty and she chastised me for eating green beans with butter on them. And that is where my body issues started.
Wow.
Wow. It's just crazy what young girls
hold on to.
Yeah, and are subjected to by these, I mean, other women.
Yeah.
But, like, they didn't know any better that they were, like, damaging young girls' body images. It's just, like, a cycle that needs to be broken. So,
yeah.
I'm happy to
be proud of yourself for whatever moves you're making today.
Yeah.
And being more mindful.
Drink your water. Go have a sip-a-rooney of water.
We're going to give you...
stay hydrated,
bitch. A few seconds here to go get yourself a glass of water.
You're going
to
get a gush and go.
Oh, my gosh.
It's a crime to not stay hydrated.
Good segue.
Thank you.
It is True Crime Day. Welcome to A Little Bit Grim.
It's a podcast. You're listening to it.
That's Jenny over there.
That's Taylor.
Hello, friends.
Hello, friends. Why do you sound like friends. Delilah?
Who?
That radio... that radio host. Hello, friends.
You know, I don't know what you're talking about. No, I'm going first today, right?
I don't know.
What?
Taylor, I'm easy breezy.
Oh, I forgot. We had this conversation earlier. I think I am going first.
Okay.
All right. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Let me paint you a picture. It's early January in Hoke County, North Carolina. Hoke County is just outside of Rayford, North Carolina, and it's a rural, wooded area. January in North Carolina is mild compared to sometimes the negative temperatures we get here in the upper Midwest. In early January, the Weather Service says that the average temp that day was a nice 66 degrees, as Brittany Locklear got ready for school that morning. It was still dark when Brittany walked down the driveway just before 7 a.m. to wait for her bus. As her mom, Connie, watched her through the window, as she did every morning, Brittany was 5 years old and was attending kindergarten at Hoke County Elementary School. Mm-hmm. Brittany was small for her age. She was the shortest and youngest child in her kindergarten class. Everyone called her Little Brittany, She was only 3 feet tall.
Oh, honey.
And 35 pounds.
Oh, she was a string bean.
Just so little. Connie stepped away from the window she was looking through to see Brittany for just a moment to use the bathroom. She went back to the window and saw that Brittany was gone and assumed that the bus had picked her up. Then Connie heard yelling and saw that her neighbor, Rose Johnson, was running toward Connie's house. Rose yelled to Connie that someone had taken Brittany.
Ooh.
She had also been keeping an eye on her kids through the window as they waited for the bus when she saw a pickup truck pull up, a man get out, and scoop Brittany up and away. The abduction took only a moment, and the man and the little girl were gone.
Oh my God.
Connie could barely believe what she was hearing. It was a small community. Everyone knew everyone. The road was only traveled by people who knew it. It was a small two-lane road with no shoulders or sidewalks. This was not town.
No.
Connie said her husband thought, Connie and her husband thought that surely this could not be happening to them. They rushed to the school to make sure Brittany did not get off the bus like all the other kids. They got to the school before the bus did, and when they talked to the driver, they said that Brittany was not waiting at the end of the driveway, so they moved to the next stop.
Mm.
And with that, Brittany Locklear was gone.
Wow.
Immediately, the search for Brittany was on. They knew that she only had been taken moments before, but they didn't have a good description of the truck or the man that took her. But again, the community was really, really small, and everyone have known everybody. This was before the Amber Alert system.
Okay.
At 9 a.m., search dogs found Brittany's green overalls, white shirt, and purple backpack as they were found discarded along the road about 2 miles from her home. The discovery was a horrible realization that they may not find Brittany alive.
Oh my gosh, it makes my stomach hurt.
Yeah. Almost 1,000 people called the sheriff's department to offer help in the search. The sheriff's department searched for Brittany until 10 p.m. when they called the search until daybreak. More than 300 officers, firefighters, neighbors, and Fort Bragg soldiers turned out the next morning to search for her.
Aww.
Yeah. Officers searched on land and from the air. A highway patrol chopper equipped with infrared technology took to the air, but it was too windy and they were forced to come down.
Mm.
On 2 p.m.
Use infrared when it's windy? Does it not work?
No, the helicopter.
Oh!
It was too windy for the helicopter.
Oh, yes, of course. Oh, my God.
Infrared waves get very disturbed by the upper atmosphere.
I can't with how dumb I am. I'm so sorry.
It's all good.
Okay, keep going.
All right. At 2 p.m. on Thursday afternoon, they found Brittany's body in a drainage ditch approximately 3 miles from her home.
Oh. Oh, that is so close.
Yeah. It gets a bit worse. Okay. Of course. She had been sexually assaulted and was drowned.
Mm.
They believe that both the assault and the murder happened in the same place that they found her body. So they didn't even take her
anywhere. Just 3 miles down the road and...
Yeah.
Ugh.
The community was absolutely heartbroken. The whole town turned up for her funeral, which was held in an auditorium of the school because no funeral homes were large enough to accommodate the amount of people who showed up. Sheriff Wayne Byrd led the murder investigation. Connie and Brittany's stepfather immediately stepped up and asked to be interviewed and polygraphed so they could be ruled out as witnesses. They knew that immediately authorities are going to look at the families, and they just said, please just get us out of the way.
Yeah.
They wanted law enforcement to focus on who was really responsible for their little girl's death.
And not them.
Right. Unfortunately, there was not a lot to go on. Rose Johnson, the neighbor, said that she just saw a man in a truck, but she was looking out the window and didn't get a good look at him. She said she thought he could have been white and thought that the truck was brown.
Mm.
The police interviewed every child molester in a 50-mile radius and came up empty-handed. They stopped every brown, tan, or white truck in the county and searched it. There were no clues.
What?
There was nothing.
There was no DNA left behind? There was nothing?
I will get to, like, more clues later, but it's very, very scarce.
Okay.
Law enforcement held a press conference saying that they were looking for this kind of truck and would be stopping all trucks that matched this description. This could have easily pushed someone to sell or alter their vehicle, the police department was caught a lot of heat
For doing that?
For telling people what they were going to be looking for. Yeah. But this was a small town. There was a sheriff's department. There were barely cops. Like, all the people who came to search for her were from out of the town.
Right.
They'd never dealt with a murder like this before. And so, they didn't know.
Was anybody from the town missing?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Personally, I think it was somebody who made themselves a part of the investigation.
Is this unsolved?
Yeah.
Oh! Taylor, I hate these.
I know. But it's important to talk about.
I know.
Okay. The station was overrun with leads coming in, and they followed up with thousands of tips.
Jeez.
Literally thousands of tips came in.
Imagine the, like, man force? Is that what I'm looking for?
Manpower?
Manpower! That would be needed to follow up with every single one of those.
Right. And that's another thing that the sheriff's department gets heat for, because they didn't have enough manpower to follow up with all those leads. And looking back, it's believed that some of the tips fell through the cracks.
Sure.
Which, it was 1994, so, or 96, so yeah. They didn't really have a lot of really, really good, like, computers and, like, Excel and stuff like that to keep track of all of these leads. Ultimately, there was not a good database for the leads coming in, and some of them slipped through the cracks. Days turned into months. It was election year in Hope County, and a new sheriff was elected. Bird, what?
That's a shitty thing to happen in your election year.
Yeah. Bird really believed that he'd be able to catch the suspect by the time he left his post that September. He said that if he was unable to make an arrest before he left office, he would work as a private citizen to do whatever he can and help the new administration.
Okay.
Sheriff Jim Davis won the election by 55%.
Wow. Slim margin.
Yep. One of his platforms was that he promised to solve the Brittany Locklear case.
That's a big promise.
Sure is. And he set his sights on the family.
Oh.
Sheriff Jim Davis borderline harassed them. He was convinced that either Brittany's biological father or her step-grandfather had something to do with it, although he had no basis for those accusations, and both had been cleared by the previous administration.
Okay.
Jim Davis only served one term because he was so unpopular. During his campaign, he said that he would continue to look tirelessly for Brittany's killer. Connie thought that he was using her daughter as a political tool to get reelected.
I think that she's correct.
I agree. The next update on the case would be in 2003. Keith Laundry, a former Fort Bragg civilian firefighter, was arrested for bank robbery.
Mm.
After his arrest, his coworkers brought up concerns about the fact that he had photos of Brittany in his locker.
Oh, what?
Icky.
Why?
That's disgusting.
It is disgusting.
I don't care how you are in love with true crime. If you are an adult and you have photos of little girls in your lockers or little boys in your lockers, that is not a good look.
No, especially ones who have gone missing and been brutally murdered.
Right. Like, I think of the people in JonBenet's case that were found with JonBenet pictures on them or in their lockers or whatever.
Yeah.
It's weird.
It's very bizarre. Grown adult shouldn't like kids that much.
Agreed.
Unless they're your own.
Yeah. However, Laundry was eliminated after DNA ruled him out, and this was the first time that the community learns that there was DNA evidence.
Aha.
So they did keep that really close to their chest.
Well, good.
Keith Laundry was the last real lead in Brittany's murder. As of today, we don't have any more ideas on who killed Brittany than that day in 1998.
Oh my gosh!
There is a $20,000 reward for anyone who has information that leads to an arrest. So why haven't you heard about Brittany Locklear before? Why don't we know her like we know JonBenet or Madeline McCann? Because we don't get to see her face. The media doesn't want us to.
Why?
Because she is a Native American.
Oh.
Connie wrote to every single major news outlet in the country asking them to cover Brittany's case. She hates doing interviews because it cuts her up every single time, but she does it even if there is a tiniest chance that she could reach someone who knows something.
Mm.
But it was difficult to even get the local channels to keep running stories on Brittany after the funeral, and major news outlets just ignore her. Brittany and her family are Native American. 4 out of 5 of our Native American women are affected by violence today. The U.S. Department of Justice found that American Indian women face murder rates that are more than 10 times the national average. Homicide is the third leading cause of death among 10 to 24-year-old women. And of
10?
Mm-hmm.
10 to 24.
10 to 24. 10 years old.
To 24 years old.
Yeah.
It is the third leading cause of death.
Yes.
That is absolutely sickening.
It is. And the fifth leading cause of death for American Indian and Alaska Native women between 25 and 34 years of age.
Jesus.
And that is information from the Centers for Disease Control. Connie believes that her race kept her out of the spotlight and away from the eyes of people living outside of Hope County, North Carolina, and Brittany deserved the coverage. Brittany would have been 29 this year.
Oh, she's our age.
Yeah. One of the reasons they have issues with Rose Johnson's account of what happened was because the area is very racially diverse. And just because she thinks he was white does not necessarily mean that he was. He could have been a light-skinned person of a different race. She was looking through a window. There's a lot of factors.
Sure.
And part of the reason why there is such a high, not only is the murder rate so high for Native American people is, or one of the other things that like kind of go into that is that it's really hard to identify their bodies sometimes because authorities don't know what they're looking for in different races. So even though somebody might be American, Indian or Native American, they could be written down as Mexican or Black.
Oh.
And then people don't know, you know, they don't search every single body that's come up that right. is listed as Mexican. They're looking for somebody who's listed as Native American.
Yeah.
So that has one thing to do with like the missing and Indigenous women issue that our country faces. But it just really, really struck me that like I had never heard of this case.
Because of that.
Yeah. And even with a name like Brittany Locklear, that's it rings to it that like Meghan McCain and like the JonBenet Ramsey.
Yes.
It has that ring to it. And the fact that she did not get the coverage is just really, really sickening to me. Like, why do we not care about her like we do?
Little white girls. Little white missing. Girls.
Why? It makes me upset.
What
so
a sad, now broken world.
Yeah. So I will post the tip line in the show notes if by any chance anybody knows something. But it was 1998 and the majority of our listeners are our age. So unless you were standing with her by the school bus, you probably didn't see anything.
God. Taylor, this has just been so fucking sad.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. I mean, there are important stories that need to be told for this exact reason, but...
Yeah, and I really, really hate covering unsolved cases. It just, they're not... Half of the joy that I find in true crime cases is
when
the
they get
court
convicted.
And,
yeah.
You know, how all of that happens and the trial and all of that, and this just is so... There's no ending. There's nothing.
It's very open-ended. It's unresolved.
Yeah. So it is one that I look forward to hopefully having an update on.
Looking forward to her family finding peace.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Gross.
Your turn.
Great. I'm about to make it a lot grosser.
Great. I can't wait.
I'm doing a big in today.
Are you?
Yeah, I didn't tell you.
What are you doing? Oh, Jesus.
Ed Gein.
Bitch, what? Okay, all right, hold on.
Sorry, strap in. Hold on. Do you need another drink? Yeah.
Yeah, hold on.
Yeah.
I have a half a one, but I don't know if that's going to get me through.
Taylor, play elevator music while you get yourself situated.
All right, eventually you're probably going to hear me crack open another one when this gets really heinous, so...
I'll give you a heads up.
All right, hold on. Let me get even more situated than I already am. I'm so sorry. I'm so sweaty already.
I just said the name. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
You said I just said the name. Like, bitch, I don't know what this name means for us for the next hour. I am fully aware.
I'm sorry. I by no means intended to do a big fatty like this, but it's what I'm doing.
I love that. Okay. I love that. I had no idea that this was what I was in for this evening.
Sorry to spring this on you. Edgeen was born in La Crosse County, Wisconsin on August 27th, 1906. The second of two boys of George Philip Geen and Augusta Wilhelmina Geen. Geen had an older brother, Harry George Geen, who was born in 1901. Augusta hated her husband.
Ooh.
He was an alcoholic. He was unable to keep a job. He worked as like a carpenter, tanner, insurance salesman. George owned a local grocery shop for a few years, but sold the business, and the family left the city to go live in isolation on a 155-acre farm in the town of Plainfield.
Okay.
Which became their permanent residence. So, Augusta took advantage of the farm's isolation by turning away outsiders who could have influenced her son, who only left the farm to go to school.
Oh.
Period. Outside of school, Geen spent most of his time doing chores, and Augusta was fervently religious,
mm-hmm.
Nominally Lutheran. But she preached to her boys about the innate immorality of the world, the evil of drinking, and her very strange internalized misogynistic belief that all women, except for herself, were naturally promiscuous and instruments of the devil.
I hate it.
So I also hate it. She reserved time every single afternoon to read to them from the Bible, usually selecting verses from the Old Testament and the Book of Revelation concerning death, murder, and divine retribution, which are fun values to instill into your children.
Into your babies.
Into your babies.
That are very impressionable and young and don't get a whole lot of people time.
No, just, you know, it's good stuff.
I love it.
Geen was shy, and classmates and teachers remembered him as having strange mannerisms, such as random laughter, as if he was laughing at, like, his own personal jokes or dialogue. To make matters worse, Augusta punished him whenever he tried to make friends.
Oh, God.
So, despite his poor social development, Geen did fairly well in school, especially in reading. It was his best subject.
Interesting.
On April 1st, 1940, Ed Geen's father, George, died of heart failure caused by his alcoholism at age 66. Henry.
So, sorry.
You're okay.
George was still with the family.
All through this.
All through this. Mm-hmm. And Augusta had, like, big problems with drinking.
Yes, because her husband was a good-for-nothing alcoholic. There's, like, reports. Now, this, I didn't put it in here because it was uncorroborated, but I fucking believe it.
Okay.
That he would abuse the hell out of his family whenever he was drinking.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to make sure that I was on the right track.
Yes. Yeah. And then he died.
Okay.
So, Henry and Ed began doing odd jobs around town to help cover living expenses. Their brothers were generally considered reliable and honest by neighbors and residents of the community. While both worked as handymen, Ed also frequently babysat for neighbors.
Ooh.
He enjoyed babysitting, seeming to relate more easily to children than adults. Harry began dating a divorced mother of two and planned to move in with her, and he was worried about his brother's attachment to their mother and often spoke ill of her around Ed, who would only respond with shock and hurt. On May 16, 1944, Henry and Ed were burning away March vegetation on the property. The fire got out of control, drawing the attention of the local fire department. By the end of the day, the fire having been extinguished and the firefighters gone, Ed reported his brother missing. With lanterns and flashlights, a search party searched for Henry, whose dead body was found lying face down.
What?
Apparently, he had been dead for some time, and it appeared that the cause of death was heart failure, since he had not been burned or injured otherwise.
Suspicious.
Super sus. So sus.
I don't think I knew that part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you started talking about his brother, I was like, how weird would it have been for him to, like,
go
on and just be a normal dude and have his brother be Ed Geen?
Yeah, he didn't.
He didn't, that's why.
He didn't, that's why.
Yeah. I see.
It was later reported by biographer Harold Schnechter that Harry had bruises on his head. And the police entirely dismissed the possibility of foul play, and the county coroner later officially listed asphyxiation as the cause of death. For whatever reason. Authorities accepted the accident theory, but no official investigation was conducted, and autopsy was not performed.
What?
Uh-huh.
But, okay. Hold.
Yes. Yes.
I have issues with that. But okay.
I'm gonna need you to move past it.
Okay. Kay. There's other things to have issue with.
There are bigger fish to fry, so to speak.
Excellent.
While he was later being questioned down the road, the investigator Joe Wilimowski brought up questions about Henry's death.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote in George W. Arndt, who studied the case, listed that it was possible and likely. That's a quote. That Henry's death was the, quote, Cain and Abel aspect of the case. So they think that his first murder was his brother. Presumably because his brother was talking shit about their mom and he was...
Could not handle that.
No.
Too loyal.
Too
loyal.
Is he a Leo? Just kidding. He's not.
What is he, though?
Oh, he is... Hold on. Let me scroll. August 27th. Is that Virgo?
Yes.
He's a Virgo. There's a lot of Virgo serial killers out here roaming the world.
Yeah, Virgo and Pisces.
Yeah, Pisces.
I'm shocked by that.
And
Geminis. There's a lot of Geminis, too.
I'm not so shocked by that.
I'm not as shocked by the Geminis, but I have so many Pisces friends that I...
But that's how they all get away with it. They're like, he's a normal, upstanding member of the community.
Yeah, he's a pillar of the community.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Oh, man.
No Libras or Scorpios up in there, though.
Nay, nay. Very few.
We're the detectives. I bet if we got a list of detectives.
Whoa.
Like, we have the list of serial killers, I would be willing to bet money dollars. Hold on. I need to know what Paul Holes is. Continue.
Potholes?
Paul Holes.
Oh. I was like, girl, you should know what a pothole is.
Oh, God. All right. Continue.
Gene and his mother were now alone on the farm.
Great.
Augusta had a paralyzing stroke shortly after Henry's death, and Ed devoted his entire heart and soul to taking care of her. Sometime in 1945, Gene later recounted, he and his mother visited a man named Smith who lived nearby to purchase straw. According to Gene, Augusta witnessed Smith beating a dog. A woman inside the Smith home came outside and yelled for him to stop, but Smith beat the dog to death.
Oh my God.
Horrible. Augusta was extremely upset by this scene, but she was not bothered by the brutality of the dog. Instead, it was the presence of the woman. Augusta told Ed that the woman was not married to Smith, so she had no business being there, and called her Smith's harlot.
Oh my gosh.
Augusta, shortly later, had a second stroke, and her health quickly deteriorated, and she died on December 29th, 1945, at the age of 67. Ed was obviously devastated by her death, and in the words of author Harold Schnechter, he had lost his only friend and one true love, and he was absolutely alone in the world.
Ooh.
You know what people do when they're alone? Make
murder.
Oh, yes. I was going to say make nipple belts, but yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Gene held on to the farm and earned money from odd jobs. He boarded up rooms used by his mother, including upstairs, the downstairs parlor, and living room, leaving them untouched. While the rest of the house became increasingly squalid, these rooms remained pristine. Gene lived thereafter in a small room next to the kitchen. Around this time, he became interested in reading pulp magazines and adventure stories, particularly those involving cannibals, or Nazi atrocities.
Oh, God. Gene, I hate him.
I know. He's terrible. And also, just to, like, look at his face. Like, I hate his face.
There's not much to like.
There's a face only a mother could love.
Gross. Especially with with how I know this story goes.
So Gein, as a handyman, he received a farm subsidy from the federal government in 1951. He occasionally worked for the local municipal road crews and crop threshing crews. Sometime between 1946 and 1956, he also sold an 80-acre parcel of land that his brother owned. Now, on the morning of November 16th, 1957, Plainfield hardware store owner Patrice Worden disappeared. A Plainfield resident reported that the hardware store's truck had been driven out from the rear of the building at around 9:30 a.m. The hardware store saw few customers the entire day, but some area residents believe this was because of deer hunting season. Bernice Worden's son, Deputy Sheriff Frank Worden, entered the store around 5 p.m. to find the store's cash register open and bloodstains on the floor. Frank Worden told investigators that on the evening before his mother's disappearance, Gein had been in the store and that he was to have returned the next morning for a gallon of antifreeze. The sales slip for a gallon of antifreeze was the last receipt written by Worden on the morning she disappeared.
Okay.
On the evening of the same day, Gein was arrested at a West Plainfield grocery store in the Waushara County Sheriff's Department searched the Gein farm.
How old was Gein at this time?
This was in 56 and he was born in 01, so yeah. 55 years old. Okay. Healthily middle-aged.
Yeah.
The Waushara County Sheriff's deputy discovered Worden's decapitated body in a shed on his property.
Oh, God.
Hung upside down by her legs with a crossbar at her ankles and ropes at her wrists.
Oh, so horrible.
I'm so sorry about this next sentence.
All right, hold on.
Open it. Her torso was dressed out like a deer.
Oh, God.
She had been shot with a .22 caliber rifle, and the mutilations were made after death. Searching the house, authorities found. This is the worst list I will ever tell you in my entire life.
Are you willing to bet money on that? Because I hope that we're going to do this podcast for a while.
I'm willing to bet money on that.
Okay. All right.
Whole human bones and fragments. A waste basket made of human skin. Human skin covering several chair seats. Skulls on his bedposts, female skulls with the tops sewn off, bowls made from the tops of those skulls.
Bowls?
Bowls, cereal bowls. He would eat soup out of them, out of the top of the skull.
Okay.
A corset made from a female torso skinned from shoulders to waist. Leggings made from human leg skin.
Leggings? Like leggings.
He peeled off their leg skin and then stitched them up and made pants. Masks made from the skin of female heads. So just their faces. He cut their faces off.
The only thing I'm imagining right now is just a man with so much delusion and mental illness alone in this 150,000 acre whatever, the 100 acre wood,
unsupervised,
just working in his little workshop,
going to town, busting his ass,
like treating them like literal animals.
Yes.
And I am deeply horrified.
As you should. It is a horrifying subject.
Continue.
Mary,
it's horrible, but like, keep it going.
It's horrible, but tell me more.
Yeah.
Mary Hogan's face in a paper bag. Her skull in a box. Bernice Worden's entire head in a burlap sack. Bernice Worden's heart in a plastic bag in front of Gein's potbelly stove.
Oh, no.
9 sets of vulva in a shoebox, a young girl's dress, and the vulvas of 2 females judged to have been about 15 years old.
Babies.
A belt made from female human nipples, 4 noses, a pair of lips on a window shade drawstring, a lamp shade made from the skin of a human face, and fingernails. Whole fingernails.
I don't know if I want to know the answer to this, but I feel like I'm going to ask it. How did they know what a lot of these body parts are after this amount of time? Are you going to tell me or no? No?
They have photos.
Oh.
A lot of these items are like in museums.
What?
Yeah. The nipple belt. You can find pictures of the nipple belt. It looks like nipples on a string. It's a nipple belt.
What museum?
Pause the podcast.
Like, there's a very serious part of me that wants to go, and then there's another more rational, probably more logical part of me that's like, that's not okay.
It's absolutely not okay.
Those women did not...
They are housed by various collectors.
Ugh, this is that thing that makes me so sick, is when people, like, glorify serial killers.
So, like, that's human skin that he upholstered onto the chair. Well, I yelled into the mic, but we'll post these on... I'm looking for
will
the...
Will we? Do you want to? Maybe we'll post the link.
Some of these aren't... Most of these are just photos of, like, the squalor.
Okay, we'll post that. I don't know how I feel about posting, like, human skin.
The nipple belt?
Yeah. Like, they didn't give consent for any of this. And, like, if it were me, I would not want my nipple posted on Instagram.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so, like, those are nipples. That's for sure. But yeah. My question specifically is the lips. How did they know that those were lips? Do they... How much lip... I don't... Why am I asking questions I don't want the answers to? The things I ask myself all the time.
Are they in this photo? He literally cut off a girl's lips.
Like her lip lips or her vag lips?
Her lips lips. Her face lips. And he tied them to the end of the blinds. Are you Googling it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is unfortunate.
You Google. I will continue to read.
Please do. I'm sorry for this derailment.
Oh, you're okay. These artifacts were photographed at the State Crime Laboratory and then, quote, decently disposed of. No, they weren't.
That's not true.
No, they were not. When questioned, Gein told investigators that between 1947 and 1952, he made as many as 40 nocturnal visits to 3 local graveyards to exhume recently buried bodies while he was in a daze-like state.
So he didn't murder these women?
He murdered a couple of them.
Okay. Not all of
them? A few of them. Not all of them.
I see.
On about 30 of those visits, he said he came out of the daze while in the cemetery and left the grave in good order and returned home empty-handed.
How many visits did he make?
40.
In about 30 of them.
He just went home.
Okay. That's too many.
That's way too many. 10 graves is 10 too many.
One is one too many.
No.
Go home, sir.
Listen, we don't want too much of a good thing now. On the other occasions, he dug up the graves of recently buried middle-aged women that he thought resembled his mother and took the bodies home where he tanned their skins to make his paraphernalia. Gein admitted to stealing from 9 graves from local cemeteries and led investigators to their locations. Alan of the State Crime Laboratory participated in opening 3 test graves identified by Gein. The tops of boxes were about 2 feet below the surface in sandy soil, and Gein had robbed the grave soon after the funerals while the graves were not completed. Test graves were exhumed because authorities were uncertain as to whether he was tall and skinny. So they didn't think that he'd be able to single-handedly dig up a whole grave in a single evening.
Okay. That's legit.
Yes. They were found as Gein described, though. 2 of the exhumed graves were found empty. One had a crowbar in place of the body, and one casket was empty. One casket Gein had failed to open when he lost his crowbar in the other grave, and most of the body was gone from the third. But he returned rings and some random body parts to the grave. So it wasn't like grave robbing.
He
wanted the parts. Yeah.
What a messed up dude.
Yes.
Okay.
Soon after his mother's death, Gein began to create a woman suit so he could become his mother to literally crawl into her skin.
I know. Geen denied having sex with the bodies he exhumed, explaining they smelled too bad.
Oh, did they?
Did they?
Were they dead?
I'm sorry. Were they smelly? During state crime laboratory interrogations, Geen also admitted to the shooting death of Mary Hogan, a tavern owner missing since 1954, whose head was found in his house, but he later denied memory of details of her death. A 16-year-old youth whose parents were friends of Geen and who attended ball games and movies with him reported that Geen kept shrunken heads in his house. When Geen had described his relics from the Philippines sent by a cousin who had served on the islands during World War II. Upon investigation by the police, these were determined to be human facial skins carefully peeled from corpses and used by Geen as masks. Geen was also considered a subject in several other unsolved cases in Wisconsin, including the 1953 disappearance of Evelyn Hartley, a lacrosse babysitter. During questioning, Washara County Sheriff Art Schley reportedly assaulted Ed Geen by banging his head and face into a brick wall. As a result, Geen's initial confession was ruled inadmissible.
Oh, God.
Schley died of heart failure at age 43 in 1968 before his trial. Many who knew him said that he was so traumatized by the horror of Geen's crimes that this, along with the fear of having to testify, especially after assaulting Geen, caused his death.
Oh, yeah.
One of his friends said he was a victim of Ed Geen as surely as if he had butchered him.
Wow.
On November 21st, 1957, Geen was arraigned on one count of first-degree murder in Washara County Court, where he pleaded not guilty by reason of insanity. Geen was diagnosed as schizophrenia and found mentally incompetent, thus unfit for trial. He was sent to the Central State Hospital for the Criminally Insane, now the Dodge Correctional Institution, a maximum security facility in Waupun, Wisconsin, and later transferred to the Mendota State Hospital in Madison. In 1968, doctors determined Geen was mentally able to confer with counsel and participate in his defense, and the trial began November 7th, 1968, and lasted exactly 1 week.
Wow.
A psychiatrist testified that Geen had told him that he did not know whether the killing of Bernice Worden was intentional or accidental. Geen had told him that while he examined a gun in Worden's store, the gun went off, killing her. Geen testified that after trying to load a bullet into the rifle, it discharged. He said he had not aimed the rifle at Worden and did not remember anything else that happened that morning. At the request of the defense, Geen's trial was held without a jury, with Judge Robert H. Golmar presiding. Geen was found guilty by Golmar on November 17th. A second trial dealt with his sanity. After testimony by doctors for the prosecution and defense, Golmar ruled Geen not guilty by reason of insanity.
What?
And ordered him committed to the Central State Hospital for the Criminally Insane. He was nuts. Out of his fucking mind. He tried to make a skin suit of his mom so he could be her.
Okay. All right. So, hear me out. I have a problem with this idea of not guilty by reason of insanity. You still did it, and you're insane. You are guilty and insane. You did both. I don't agree that people can be put in a mental institution and still be given, like, relative aspects of freedom.
I wouldn't consider it freedom.
Not freedom, but it's viewed upon as a lesser sentence.
It is. Although I would say it's no walk in the park. And honestly, it's for the safety of other prisoners.
That's true. That's true. I'm just that the fact that it's, like, listed as not guilty at any rate rubs me the wrong way.
Fair enough. That's fair. I understand that. We can have a guilty but crazy.
Yeah, please give me guilty but crazy.
It should be guilty by reason of insanity, not guilty by reason of insanity.
Even guilty, and you will serve your guilty sentence
at this
place.
Specialized facility.
Yeah.
I agree.
I'm okay with that.
And that's kind of more what it is, too, because...
Yeah, I just... That
upsets you.
Yeah, I'm a Libra. I'm the scales.
Taylor's trying to find justice here.
Give me the justice for crying out loud. Sorry.
That's okay. Ordered him to be committed to Central State Hospital for the Criminally Insane. Geen spent the rest of his life in a mental hospital. Judge Golmar wrote, due to prohibitive costs, Geen was tried for only one murder, that of Mrs. Worden. He also admitted to killing Mary Hogan. He died at the Mendota Mental Health Institute of Respiratory Failure on July 26, 1984, at the age of 77.
Wow.
He is buried next to his family in the Plainfield Cemetery in a now unmarked grave.
Oh, I bet you can't have that.
No, you can't have it.
I wonder how many headstones they went through. Like, how many vandalized headstones they went through before they just decided to unmark it.
Probably just the one.
You think?
Yeah. Probably just the
they
one.
Didn't just try to keep going?
Nah. I don't think so.
Wow. What a story.
So that's the story of Ed Gein and the nipple belt.
Wow. I'm horrified. It's
upsetting, for sure.
What a heavy episode.
What a heavy episode. Sorry if we ruined your day. I hope you have a good one.
I hope you have a good weekend.
Do you have a bright and shiny?
I do. My bright and shiny is going to be my stepmom, Laura.
Aww.
I received just the sweetest, kindest text message from her this morning that sent me into an emotional tailspin, but that's okay. It was
a good one.
Good emotional tailspin. And I am just very grateful for how things turned out.
All things work together for good.
Yes. What's your bright and shiny?
Ugh, I have too many to pick from.
What a good problem.
I know. It is a good problem to have. I'm going to say my bright and shiny is being able to, we just got back from Gatlinburg mm-hmm. with Ian's family.
Yeah.
And his family is just a delight. His baby brother's girlfriend. She listens to the podcast. Hi, Maren.
Hi.
I love her with my whole entire heart and soul.
Sweet baby angel.
His Nana is hysterical. She reminds me so much of Mom.
Oh, cute.
And I love his family. I'm really miss the feeling of like having a big family. And I think after Mom, I was like scared that feeling was gone and now I have no family.
Yeah.
So I'm just really excited to be able to marry into like such a really beautiful, hysterical group of people.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things about loss is that fear of, like, your family is falling apart mm-hmm. or it's going to be missing. And I think we're both very, very fortunate to have found and be a part of family that maybe we didn't see.
Found happening. Family.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's certainly a blessing. So.
Orphans, but not really.
Orphans, but orphans who have been found.
Yeah.
Like Les Mis, like Hugh Jackman orphans.
We've been claimed.
We've been claimed. Pick me orphans.
The lost and found. That should have been the name of the podcast.
Kent's house for lost girls.
Yes. Oh, Jesus.
Oh, man. Well, thanks for listening to our podcast.
Yeah. If you like us, you can leave us a review.
So helpful for us.
That is so kind. And
share us with a friend.
Yeah. If you have a friend that is into ooky spooky stuff, go ahead and send us their way. Send them to us. Either way.
Either way.
We'll take it. Follow us on the social medias. Send us an email if you've got a story you want to tell us.
I would like for people, when they send us a listener story, to also include a bright and shiny.
And where you heard about us.
Yeah.
So we're giving you a lot of tasks.
Listen, it's it's marketing research.
The bright and
shiny.
Know.
We got to know. I want to know the most terrible thing that's ever happened to you, and then also the bright and shiny. And then where you heard about us.
Yes.
And the last four of your social.
Oh, yeah. And your pronouns. We should just have a form.
I could probably make one.
Can we do like a Google form?
Yeah. A Google Doc?
Yeah.
Okay. Send us your email for a Google Doc.
Get on our email list. Just kidding. We don't have one.
No, don't. You want to send out a newsletter?
Yeah. Okay. I think that'd be fun.
If you guys want a newsletter, DM us. Otherwise, we'll never do it. No. Okay. Love you.
Love you. Be kind to yourself.
And to others. Bye.